Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Today, we talk to film expert and journalist Susanne Burg. Susanne hosts the film program Vollbild on Deutschlandfunk Kultur, plans the station's film coverage, and reports from the world's major and smaller film festivals. After studying North American studies in German, Susanne worked for 3 years as a freelance cultural journalist in New York. She now lives and works in Berlin. We talked to Susanne via video call for this interview. Hi, Susanne. Thank you for sitting down with us today. Today, we'll be talking in depth about the genre of rom-com. We will focus on German rom-coms during our talk, but obviously, we'll be referencing other rom-coms as well. And a point that came up quite a lot during conversations about rom-com was that it's a genre that not everybody is necessarily happy to be associated with. Although some people were, a few that we asked to appear on the podcast declined because they felt, and I quote, not comfortable to be associated with the genre. Writer Robin Lee, whose novel The Idea of Us is going to be a movie with Anne Hathaway, states, "We have this problem in our culture. We take art that appeals to women, film, books, music, and we undervalue it. We assume it can't be high art, especially if it's not dark and tortured and wailing. We wrap it up in a pretty pink package and resist calling it art." I find that quote quite poignant regarding the genre of rom-com, and I'd be interested how you perceive the place of the genre in the overall film or story universe.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting quote. I think rom-coms are one of the most, I guess, underrated, misunderstood, but also most watched genres in film history. The problem is really that it's dismissed by film critics, by historians, often overlooked in award shows. But one has to remember it's the backbone of Hollywood. Romantic comedies have had their first commercial successes in the 1930s, 40s, screwball comedies by Ernst Lubitsch or Howard Hawks. Some of them are even considered the greatest movies ever made, such as The Apartment, the 1960 movie directed by Billy Wilder. Movies like When Harry Met Sally, Bridget Jones' Diary were huge successes. People watch them over and over again. And if they admit they love it, it's almost like a confession, often connected with the excuse, it's a guilty pleasure. And Mindy Kaling, the American actress, referred to that guilty pleasure in 2011 in a long article in The New Yorker that I found really interesting. She said she doesn't believe in guilty pleasures, only in pleasures. But she also said she felt almost embarrassed whenever she revealed that she loves romantic comedies. I think because the genre has been so degraded also in the past 20 years, whenever you say you like romantic comedies, it, as she put it, an admission of mild stupidity. This was 2011 when the reputation of the rom-com was particularly bad. But to me, it summarizes the problem we have. The rom-com has a problem of reputation, an image problem. And it's sad because when you look at the genre, it reflects so well where we are in society in a lot of gender issues and concepts of love and life. So I think it's sad that rom-com has such a bad reputation.
I absolutely agree. And since we're talking specifically about German films and German rom-coms, how would you locate or place the genre in the German film universe?
The entire industry worked a little differently here. Until the 1980s, American mainstream movies sort of dominated the market commercially. In the 1980s, a few German comedies came up, such as Oedipussy by Loriot, a film called Manta. And then it wasn't until the 90s that a new generation of young filmmakers came up, such as Sönke Wortmann, Katja von Garnier, Detlef Buck, who were ready to produce entertainment. And a lot of these movies that they produced were comedies about relationships. And I say relationships about comedies because the romance part was pretty small. I would say it was approximately 90% comedy, 10% maybe romance. If so, and very rarely a happy ending in the sense that the two people just destined for each other find each other. And I think it has only changed since about, 2000, a little later, When the romantic aspect has been getting stronger in movies by Til Schweiger, such as Kein Ohrhasen and Das schönste Mädchen der Welt by Aaron Lehmann. And it might still be changing now because of all the streaming services, but so far I would say German filmmakers have been a bit suspicious of too much romance and too many emotions.
You already touched a little bit on what I was going to ask next, because as you mentioned just now, in the 1980s and 1990s, rom-coms were really quite popular and successful at the box office. Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, A Pretty Woman, While You Were Sleeping, and suddenly there was this extreme move away from the films. And some people have argued that maybe because the actors aged out of the genre, or that maybe the genre grew too formulaic, so they were not deemed to be financially successful anymore. Do you have any theories why rom-coms had such a hard time in the 90s? I mean, you just mentioned societal issues as well that may have played a part in that.
Yeah, I think there's several reasons, and you mentioned some of them, and I think it also speaks to the problems that Hollywood studios had in general at the time. The bosses were the gatekeepers and tried to play it what they considered safe. What people didn't see very often was that 2010, that time about, was a time when American society was undergoing a radical shift. The campaign for marriage equality was, for example, escalating. The battle for racial equality, feminism were entering mainstream cultural discourse. But the rom-coms produced didn't respond to that. And many people thought of were too white, too privileged, too heterosexual. And they also became more and more detached from reality. They had more and more grand gestures, high concept promises. And I think the audience became too familiar with these tropes and didn't find themselves really. So as you mentioned, also the rom-com genre was aging up, the creatives and the audiences were older people, and the next generation of movie stars didn't make a career in rom-coms. They made a career in indie dramas and blockbusters. Yeah. And that's when I think blockbusters took over and studios and audiences became obsessed with blockbusters, with Marvel movies. As a consequence, all mid-range movies struggled and they were directly affected. And that is where the rom-com also started having problems.
And considering Robin Lee's statement from earlier, do you maybe also agree that rom-coms were pushed to the side because they are often targeted at women and female audiences and still are, and often an afterthought to the studios and the financiers?
I think that might be a point, yeah. Because when you look at the history of rom-coms, very successful ones by women, female writers and or directors had the hardest time convincing studio bosses that they had good material. Mm-hmm. Some of the most successful rom-coms were made in spite of the studio bosses, in spite of the sexism and racism of the industry, and sometimes both. For example, Waiting to Exhale.
Yeah.
And another one, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, both had a hard time to get made, but they were successful. They were character focused stories, no cliches, for example, of what a black woman was allowed to be in Waiting to Exhale. So that's one aspect. And a more general aspect, I think, which relates a bit to the quote you mentioned in the beginning, the famous Richard Curtis touched on that. Curtis, who wrote scripts for Mr. Bean or Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Bridget Jones, so many, he said, and I would like to quote him, "You write a play about a soldier going absent without leave and stabbing a single mother, and they say it's a searing indictment of British society, whereas you write a play about a guy falling in love with a girl, which happens a million times a day in every corner of the world, and it's called blazingly unrealistic, sentimental rubbish. People prefer to write about tragedies because they can't get to the bottom of happiness or comedy." And I find that such a nice quote, and so revealing.
Absolutely.
And interesting, because in a way romantic comedies are basically, if we look at it, a mix of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So those are well-respected books, obviously. But with rom-coms, the classical ones, we seem to have problems.
That is a great quote. One other point that director Jason Orley touched on in an interview that I found interesting is also, he calls these films desert island movies. And he says, "I think they're the most underappreciated and misunderstood genre of films, because Those are the movies that audiences watch over and over because they love how they make them feel. I love a movie I can watch with my family, with my wife, with my parents, one that we can quote endlessly to each other and laugh about its relevance years after it's been made. Obviously, I completely agree with him here. I mean, there are some rom-coms that I have seen way too many times to count. And yes, I also quote the dialogue with my friends. So I was particularly happy when several years ago, a slew of new rom-coms started to be made. How did you perceive this new wave of rom-coms? It was a slow start, but then sort of turned into a wave.
Yeah, and maybe it even started with a movie that eventually made it to the big screen, but Netflix had been fighting for it, and it now has a great afterlife there. And I'm talking about Crazy Rich Asians. It was, it came out in 2018, and it had a completely non-white cast, which was very, very unusual. Starring an actress who has just won an Oscar in Everything Everywhere All at Once, Michelle Yeoh. This was a big hit already. It's a classic fish out of the water story with protagonist Rachel Chu, an economics professor in New York, traveling to Singapore to meet the family of her boyfriend and discovering that he belongs to one of the wealthiest families in Asia. So it's a story about the rich and the beautiful, but depicted with a specificity culturally, a culture that is rooted in Eastern culture, but that spoke to a lot of people everywhere. And it was a huge success, proving that a movie with an Asian cast could be successful. And I think it brought diversity to rom-coms after that. And when Crazy Rich Asians came out, for example, Netflix launched a wave of rom-coms at the same time because it had seen the potential, also because the studios in Hollywood would have moved away from rom-coms. And one of those films that they launched was To All the Boys I've Loved Before, about a teen who writes letters to all of her past loves, and they are for her eyes only, but one day they reach her previous love and there's chaos. It was also immensely successful. People loved the relatable characters. They were young, diverse. There were two sequels after that. And I think that was sort of indicative of similar rom-coms, very, very diverse. That's really when diversity started.
Yeah. Speaking about To All the Boys I've Loved Before, and then there was The Kissing Booth, others followed. And interestingly enough, though, I feel that now the genre has been split. There's films targeted at all audiences or also more mature ages. And then there's films and series targeted at more teenage audience. The Summer I Turned Pretty, From My Window. Any thoughts on this, or do you see this maybe differently?
No, I agree totally. And I think it fits in with the streamers' general algorithms. They target more and more to certain groups. And you mentioned The Kissing Booth. That's a great example. It was made, I think, for teenagers who are growing out of movies aimed at kids, but not quite satisfied by rom-coms aimed at adults. And the way it was developed is interesting also because it goes back to a story that was posted by a 15-year-old, Beth Riegel, to an online community where writers can post stories, adding a chapter each week. It won an award, drew the attention of publishers, eventually of Netflix, was adapted, premiered 2018. You know, it suits the idea of Netflix, as I mentioned, figure out what the subscribers want and give them more of it. Sort of a lot of sequels started. And what I find interesting is I think the irony that one found in a lot of rom-coms before is gone in these rom-coms. There's more sincerity, more earnestness, sort of an emotional directness that one can perceive.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd like to get a bit more specific about the depiction of love and romance. As someone who has seen quite a few films of the genre, what is your take on how much of each should be shown or not?
That is so difficult. As I touched on earlier, maybe the German audiences have been a little more careful in embracing romance. That might be different for audiences in other countries. And then I think love can be shown in so many different forms, and sometimes it might just be a conversation. For example, the big great movie When Harry Met Sally. The first 14 pages of the script are just Harry and Sally talking about love and sex. And it's really razor sharp dialogue, and it's really pivotal for the development of their relationship. And when we think of that really famous scene at Katz's Delicatessen where Sally fakes an orgasm, It works so well because it's funny and it discusses sexual pleasure with a frankness that's really rarely seen in mainstream cinema. So I think it really has to do also with credibility, how much is shown, how it's shown. That means a good script. For when Harry Met Sally, there were lots of script versions, and it was all about finding the very balance of love and romance. The question, would Harry or Sally do this or that? So I think credibility again.
Yeah.
And then chemistry between the actors is really important. A lot of directors say that. Here, Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal apparently just hit it off. So maybe it's not about the ingredients, but about the quality of the story, the script, and the action. And the question, is it believable?
Yeah. Which I'm going to sort of put my finger in it a bit more, because is there an effective combination, do you think? Or does that depend on the specific story being told? I guess I'm wondering if there's such a thing as a golden formula.
Yeah, it's interesting. The golden formula, I think, is what everybody is looking for in general for good movies. And when there's criticism about rom-coms, it's also very often that it's formulaic, which I find an interesting criticism, because formulas are at the heart of every genre. Same is true for action or sci-fi movies. But when it seems formulaic, it also means that we don't trust the story. We don't indulge. I think, again, it's about credibility. And there's another example that comes to my mind. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, the writer Nia Vardalos shopped her idea around. Executive wanted to make her Hispanic everything. She heard that she was not pretty enough. So there were too many traditional gatekeepers in Hollywood. They couldn't imagine an audience. And what she did was she worked in a small theater in Los Angeles and worked on her material, checked the jokes that worked with the audience. So she perfected her story, her everything, until Tom Hanks came, who had just formed his production company, Playtone, was looking for new material. And the movie was made, and it earned $368 million worldwide when it came out in 2002. So there we go.
And also, I think an important part was that Tom Hanks's wife, Rita Wilson, has Greek heritage as well. So I think she, you know, sort of found herself in the story. So that, I think, definitely helped with the credibility, as you mentioned. Talking about the formula, as you mentioned, you know, critics sometimes say it's too formulaic. The audience says that as well. And you know, films don't have any success. Sarah, who's a film critic from CineSnark and also writes on Lainey Gossip, says romantic movies are a hell of a lot harder to pull off than the industry gives them credit for, because they treat them as plug and play formula, when really it's all about that indefinable chemistry that is so hard to find. And you mentioned earlier also that, you know, Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan sort of hit it off. And I think that is something that is, you know, together with the credibility, that is something that is often overlooked. Let's talk about some of the German rom-coms. In recent weeks, I've talked to directors Maggie Perrin, Aaron Lehmann, and Katja von Garnier, and Caroline Herford will follow in May. I remember quite well the buzz that happened when Abgeschminkt came out 30 years ago this year. And it was such a fun romantic movie, quite unusual for German films back then, I have to say. With Das schönste Mädchen der Welt a few years ago, there was a similar buzz. Given all the challenges filmmakers face today, do you think it's easier or harder to make a good rom-com?
It's really difficult to say, and I think it would be a great question for producers. What I can see is that in Germany, there are rom-coms being made. There's, for example, a new Sky original German show called Tender Hearts that combines sci-fi with rom-com about a woman who starts a relationship with a humanoid. I haven't seen it, but apparently it wants to tackle different relationship models. Sounds interesting. Sound like it's found a way to talk about issues that concern people today. So that's something, you know, that's a lot of rom-coms had been missing in the past. Another aspect, I think, is that slowly more women get to make mid-range movies in Germany. Women like Caroline Herford. And she, I think, personally in particular, has really made a difference for Germany since she showed that rom-coms can be intelligent, talk about issues of today. I think also comedies in general are more accepted, maybe a skepticism in Germany towards real feeling and comedy. is slowly vanishing. We might be a bit more relaxed now. So probably maybe it is a good time for rom-coms in Germany.
Okay. And now this is a bit tricky, I know, but looking back, do you feel that Abgeschminkt holds up after all of these years?
I actually watched it again, preparing. I was surprised. I think it worked astonishingly well.
Yeah.
I think for several reasons. For those who don't remember, it's a story of a cartoonist played by Katja Riemann, who is asked to help her friend to get to know the man of her dreams by dealing with a friend of the man. Katja Riemann has to spend time with that friend of the man of the dreams. Of course, things don't work as expected. The dream man turns out to be not so perfect, whereas the other two get along pretty well. What is great about the movie is that I think the two female characters are so lovable. It's told from their perspective, and it's more about their friendship than about men. Particularly with the cartoonist, we see a very post-feminist woman who is proud, independent, somewhere longing for romance. But instead of real romance, we see a lot of clumsy attempts to get close, which is particularly true for the sex scene. So I think this post-feminist character of the cartoonist holds up extremely well. I think we haven't really developed as a society much from the 90s.
Yeah.
Maisha, the other friend, might be a bit stuck in the 50s, in the 1950s, in terms of the way she perceives gender roles, but she's growing as well in the movie. So I recommend everybody to go watch it again.
Yeah, I'm glad you agree, because I thought the same thing. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I really enjoyed watching it again. Hello Again used the Groundhog Day setup for its storyline, and I felt overall it worked quite well, although at some points the romance part seemed to take a little backseat to the comedy. And going back to the formula we talked about earlier, in the new rom-coms, the hero's journey has often changed to a heroine's journey. And because it used to be that the woman needed to help the guy change so that they could fall in love. But nowadays, it's often the other way around, which Hello Again also made good use of. And as you also already mentioned, the male-female categories have been made more inclusive, thank God. But overall, would you argue that a rom-com even needs a hero or heroine's journey at all?
Huh, that is a good question. I think a protagonist to identify with probably helps for a good film. some kind of development within the character probably also helps the dramatic arc of a story, of a movie. I think the question at heart is how to make a rom-com about how people are dating and falling in love today. And as I mentioned before, concepts of love have changed. And what I've been wondering is, does it always have to be the ideal of a happy wedding and a monogamous relationship between two people? Can casual relationships be a choice as well? Or is that goes that against the idea of a romantic comedy? I don't know. I don't have an answer, but I think rom-coms have for a long time been stuck in that very ideal of an everlasting relationship.
Okay. Yeah.
But then, as I mentioned, I don't know if, you know, one changes that, do we have to call it differently?
Interesting. Yeah. And now a few general questions. What is your favorite, maybe German, rom-com and why?
It might actually be Wunderschön by Caroline Herfurth, a movie that came out last year. It shows five women at different ages and in different parts of their lives, but all of them struggle with the image of themselves and the expectations of others. If it's the woman in her 50s who doesn't feel noticed by her husband, or the young mother who feels ugly after childbirth, I think it shows women's vulnerability and talks about topics like self-optimization and beauty concepts with a lot of humor and empathy, and it's done so intelligently. Yeah, I really, really like that one.
Okay. And which rom-com, a new one or a classic one, that you watched has been the biggest surprise?
One that really surprised me was Something's Gotta Give. Came out in 2003. It starred Jack Nicholson, Diane Keaton, and Nancy Meyers rom-com. It showed to me that people in their 50s and 60s could not only fall in love, but it also allowed a more mature woman to be depicted having a sex drive, something that impressed me. There's also a very funny sex scene in which Keaton's character takes Nicholson's character's blood pressure to make sure he doesn't have a heart attack during the act. It got Diane Keaton an Oscar nomination, and it was for a demographic Hollywood had neglected, the audience that had watched rom-coms in the 90s and that had aged. I think that was a really interesting and courageous movie to be made.
And last but not least, why would you recommend audiences to make sure to watch rom-coms?
A lot of us have, I think, this guilty pleasure syndrome that I mentioned in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think it is liberating to get rid of it and indulge in pleasure. And I think good rom-coms don't have to be stupid. No, they're smart, have to say a lot about a very important aspect of our lives, that is relationships and love. So what is there not to like about it?
Perfect. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure was mine. Thank you.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films. The National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. We'll be right back.